It is a Tuesday morning, and Tuesdays we get in touch with Dr. Don Clark. Don, a biochemist, a member of the board of Creation Moments, and a vintner, resides in Garden Valley, Texas, which is just a fur piece from here, just a hoot and a holler from here. And Don, I remember last week we were asking about the rain and the weather and how the grapes and the vineyards are doing, and you said there are no grapes this year. Does this mean you have nothing to do?
Oh, no. That doesn't mean that we have nothing to do. No, we've got a new vineyard that is, new vineyards that are growing, hopefully growing. Mm-hmm. And so those will have to be trained as time goes on here. And then our older vineyard that we didn't replace this year, it has to be retrained as well.
Now, when you say retrained, is that whip and chair stuff? Or I think you tie the vines so they grow in a certain direction? Is that what you mean by training?
Yes. Oh, yeah, so okay. You have to, some of the vines, for example, nothing grew up on top where the cordon was.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started pushing vines from the bottom of the vine, so we basically had to cut those vines completely down, then you take the vine or one or two vines that are coming up from the bottom, and then you train it up and basically reform the whole vine and reform mm-hmm. the cordon. So mm-hmm. it's a lot of work.
You cannot let them grow along the ground, can you? I mean,
no.
Because that's biblical. Did you know that?
What's that?
Lifting up the vine. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. So I just had a brainstorm idea for you here. This could set you apart from other vineyards all around the world. Play classical music in the middle of your vineyards. I've heard that plants respond to that. What do you think?
See.
A little Mozart?
It'll keep them calm, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll be. We'll have some smart grapes. After playing for a while.
Yeah, they'll be cultured, so to speak. Yeah,
cultured grapes.
Very cultured grapes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. indeed. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Well, let me jump on that right away.
Phila with all those other great ideas I've had. And I know, just a passing thought here. Speaking of passing thoughts, I'm really getting confused here. This article, by the way, there's a link to the article that we're about to discuss in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if anybody would like to follow along. But there's also two references at the bottom, and those two articles about blue stragglers and Mercury's fading magnetic field, those are pretty complicated things. But it all has to do, the allegory they use is plate spinning. Now, I remember back on the Ed Sullivan Show, in fact, more than once. I don't know if it was the same plate spinner, but it's an act that rivets your attention because there's this table, and there's maybe six plates with sticks lying down. He picks one up, starts one at one end, then he picks up number two and starts it twirling on the end of that stick, and then he has to go back to number one and give it another little more energy, and then number two, and then three, and then he gets number four up, and he gets to six, and you just know that. And I think the gimmick is you let one come close to dropping, so that people go oh, and then you save it. And I have this picture of God with nine plates spinning, each one representing a planet in our solar system. And as the energy starts to, he rushes back and gives that one another spin. And I've noticed that the third one from the sun is beginning to droop just a little bit. And of course, that would be the Earth's here. Plate spinning,
Jim,
spinning
plates. You are really dating yourself with the Ed Sullivan Show. I mean, you know, people can't really tell how old we are.
Yeah.
Necessarily by our voices, they may think that we're quite young.
No, but, all I can say is never ever try that at home, because
you used your best china. Mm-hmm. Don't do it with that. Practice on some cheap stuff, you know, that you can get.
Well, I'll tell you, paper plates don't work. Paper plates don't work. So forget that.
Oh yeah, no, they don't have enough weight, and you know, they're not quite balanced. And the bottom of the plate needs a rim, so mm-hmm. you can mm-hmm. yeah. move the stick around. Anyway, that whole concept. Yeah, go
I
ahead.
I remember the times that I watched them. The guy always was able to grab the plates off the end of the end of the poles before they fell to the ground.
That may be because if he had to keep buying plates, you know, it would be an expensive act.
Can you envision him at a practice session when he's just getting started?
You probably use cheap plates, but then you get used to a certain plate and its weight and, you know, how to manipulate it. So you gotta work with ultimately. You know, plates.
Well, that makes it a good comparison because each planet has its own mass, its own size, its own electromagnetic field. But apparently, they're all degrading over the time, are they not?
Well, then they've got to be all different plates too. Oh, by the way, the guy we're talking about, his Eric Bren.
Oh, you found him.
Yep, I found him.
You Googled plate twirling.
Yes.
On the Ed Sullivan Show. Well, you know.
Why not?
This is quite an entertaining program that we've got going on this morning.
I'm desperately trying to find a transition into the subject matter here, you know. So.
Okay.
Well, we'll get there someday.
All right. So the transition is that imagine, you know, you see you walk into a room, and this is the opening of this particular article. You walk into the room and you see a plate twirling. You don't see the plate twirler, but you see the plate twirling and it's beginning to wobble. And so then you do an experiment. You go back in time 3 minutes. And you walk back into the room and you see that the plate is wobbling less because it's got more energy in the spin and it's probably spinning faster. And maybe it's not even wobbling at all. And so, you know, the question, of course, is that, well, okay, if the universe, now let's compare this with the universe, if the universe behaves on a similar principle, that is, we're losing energy as time goes on, which part of that is called entropy, and things are going from order to disorder. But if the universe is losing energy over time, then wouldn't we see then that, as you suggested, that maybe all the planets are wearing out, the Earth, the sun is wearing out, and all the stars are wearing out, and all this other stuff. And especially if the universe is, 18 billion years old, as some astrophysicists think that it is, based on starlight from very, very distant galaxy clusters. All right. Well, if it is that old, then we have some problems, because lo and behold, when you look at the universe, it is... pretty much in balance. That is, everything, the planets are rotating around the sun at a certain distance, and the moon is rotating around the Earth at a certain distance, and things seem to be working, at least for life here on Earth.
When you say balance, and I know the moon, for example, is actually getting farther away. I mean, like millimeter by millimeter. I mean, not that it would be apparent to the naked eye. But it seems that this everything is changing, everything is degrading in its energy state, but it's doing so in a coordinated fashion so that it all still works. That's the amazing part of this to me.
Well, and the other thing is that, okay, so yes, the moon is moving away, but it's moving away infinitesimally amounts, this year the moon is a little bit further away than it was last year and so forth and so on. But that gives you an opportunity to say, hey, wait a minute, let's go back and perhaps calculate when the moon was... touching the Earth, if such a thing ever happened. And the reason why the moon is moving away, from the Earth is because the moon speed is slowing down with time. And so, it's like if you have a ball at the end of a string and you're twirling it around, and then let's say it's, attached to a rubber band. a long rubber band and you're spinning it around, well, the harder you spin it, you know, of course, you have more energy, and so the rubber band goes a little bit further. But this is actually just the opposite of that, in that the gravitational field of the Earth and the Moon working together, the slower the speed, then the further away the Moon will be.
Okay, here's a hard question for you. If the Moon is getting further away, that means at some point, as you inferred, in the distant past, it was closer to the Earth than it is now. And there are those people that say the Moon actually was ejected from the Earth. Its matter came from the Earth. I don't know that that's true. But my question is, does this mean that the rate of change is constant? So that if you apply over a certain time, you can actually make a prediction. But what if the rate of change is not constant? Do we know that it's constant or that it's not?
I'm not sure about that, but that is a good question. You could, assuming that the rate is, you could make the assumption, let's just assume that the rate is constant. You can then go back and calculate, well, okay, how long was it when the Earth and the Moon were almost touching each other, if they were? And you'd probably find out that, gee, it wasn't that long ago, maybe a couple of million years ago that was probably the case. In which case, you know, there wouldn't be life on Earth because the gravitational pull of the Moon would be so great that you'd have earthquakes and all this other stuff happening because of the gravitational pull of the Moon. But... So that's one issue, but you've got other issues, for example, in the solar system, not just the in the universe in particular, and not just the Moon and its rotation around the Earth, but you have, for example, these stars that are called blue stars, and you mentioned them a little bit in the introduction. But these are stars. The reason why they're blue is because they're burning faster than other stars. Now, our star is burning at a normal, moderate rate. And, you know, it's going to use up its fuel probably in billions of years. But blue stars are a different story. They are burning much, much faster. And they would burn out very quickly unless new fuel was added to them. And so astrophysicists, you know, trying to justify, for example, the existence of blue stars if the universe is old and if particular galaxy clusters, for example, are at a certain age, billions of years, how is it that these, you know, blue stars are still around? Well, they conjecture that the blue star is actually pulling energy away from a hidden star, you know, that is, you can't see because it's not giving off very much energy. And maybe, you know, you have a binary star system where the energy is being pulled from the one that you actually can't see.
These are all this is rationalizing on the part of those scientists.
Well, rationalizing and okay, some of the
theorizing,
you know, some of the stars are actually binary stars. For example, in NGC 188, for example, they found that of the 21 blue stars that are in that particular galaxy cluster, 16 of which are binary stars. That with closely interaction by the nearby star. So, okay, all right, there we go. We found our answer. At least 16 of the 21 are binary, and you do the calculation, and you know what? These blue stars, even with the binary clusters, aren't going to last more than a couple of million years. So how do we get, then, billions of years out of a couple of million years? Well, we can argue our way around that from the point of view, well, you know, maybe they've had a collision with another star sometime in its past, but we later find out that collisions are rare, if ever have they happened. And so that doesn't answer the question. And so they then try to struggle and say, well, for whatever reason, you know, they were acting like normal stars, and then all of a sudden they became blue and started sucking energy from the other stars or nearby stars or gases or whatever. But that doesn't really hold much weight either, because it's, you know, it's just a maybe, and it's there is no evidence for such a thing that these blue stars were other than blue stars even from the very beginning. So it points to, after, you know, going through this exercise, it really points to that, hey, these blue stars are evidence for a young universe, because if the universe was old, they would have burnt out already a long time ago, millions and millions of years ago, for example, if not billions of years ago, if indeed the universe is 18 billion years old, and this particular star cluster is, they were saying, 7 billion years old. So that didn't work out so well for a deep time, and it works out pretty well for young Earth. But we have an existence of blue stars, and so therefore the universe must be at least a couple of million years, no more than a couple of million years old, otherwise these blue stars would have dissipated. Now, let's get to the other proposal in this particular article, and that of the magnetic fields, the magnetic fields of the planets. Now, this particular article is on the Mercury, but it also holds for other planets, including Earth. We know, for example, because of measurements that we've done through NASA's Messenger's spacecrafts, for example, that they've sent up, and we know from Earth's own magnetic field that the magnetic field of Earth is degrading over time. And that Mercury's, for example, and Neptune's and other planets, are their magnetic fields are also degrading over time. And so the question is, well, how long ago did the magnetic field exist? Did it exist from the very beginning? Other questions arise, like how did the magnetic field get there in the begin with? Because the way the Earth and the core, and what they think the core is made out of, and the currents in the molten areas around the core, how they seem, you know, to be flowing, doesn't really explain how the magnetic field got there in the first place. Well, there was a creation scientist named Russell Humphreys, and he published a magnetic field model based on clues from the Bible. That is, that all the planets and everything started off as big watery balls. So he made the assumption that the mass of the planet was once one ball of water, and all the water dipoles were lined up, and this is what created the magnetic field in the beginning. And then of course, you know, some of the water mass turned into, you know.
Well, now just wait a second here. That's what Genesis says happened.
Exactly. That's exactly what Genesis says has happened. And so he used the Genesis model for the basis of his mathematical and physical model. You know, then calculated the decay of the magnetic field around Earth and the various planets in our solar system. And of those planets that have measurements over time of the magnetic field decay, his model predicts their decay perfectly. So, also, by the way, his model also suggests that the magnetic field couldn't have been around any longer than 6,000 or so years because at that point, then the magnetic field is so great that it couldn't exist. You know, life wouldn't exist anyway. So, therefore, his model suggests that the planets then started about 6,000 years ago. And so it's, and then of course the friction, electrical resistance within the planets caused the magnetic field to decay. And, you know, so his calculations have been borne out time and time again, the more that we measure magnetic fields around the planets.
And I noted here that if you're in the, this is one of the footnotes. This is a footnote number two in the article, if anybody's following with this. Humphrey says, my predicted 4% decrease in only 33 years would be very hard for evolutionary theories of planetary magnetic fields to explain. 4% in 33 years, that's 1/25. Every 33 years, so the 25 times 33, you do the math, it shouldn't be here anymore. If it was old, it should be long gone, that magnetic field.
Oh, exactly. That's the whole point. Yeah, there shouldn't be any more magnetic field around any of the planets, including ours, but thank God there still is a magnetic field around us, because that magnetic field is protecting us from solar radiation, for example, and concentrating them at the poles, as opposed to, you know, beaming down on us and irradiating everybody. So it's a good thing that we have a magnetic field, and it's a good thing that it's going to last a little while longer and protect us. But it's not going to last forever, for example. So
I just looked at Earth.com. And it's got an article about the magnetic field or the magnetic pole moving. And it's moving to the, I think it's to the east, and roughly about 40 kilometers a year.
So you're saying that that has to do with the tilt of the axis? No, that's just the magnetic North Pole is changing
just,
position.
Just magnetic North Pole, yeah.
Interesting.
Now, in the beginning of the 20th century, it was in Canada. In 2000, it was in Greenland. And 20 years later, it is in Siberia and moving east.
Mm-hmm. So right.
Is that relative to what we're talking about, or is that a different topic entirely?
No, that's a different topic. So that is the direction of the magnetic...
Our compasses are no good anymore, apparently.
really.
And in the past, to even add more fuel to the conversation here, in the past, the magnetic field has flipped. So it's not the magnetic field's direction. It's the total magnetic field energy that is decreasing over time. But in the past, the magnetic field has flipped several times in its past, and we know this because of, for example, iron and which direction the magnetic field in a piece of iron, for example, is pointing in the crust of the Earth.
North to south, or if the poles reverse, then it goes the other direction. It's always negative to positive, so...
Right.
Yeah.
So the poles have flipped in the past and probably will flip again, but they've flipped sometimes they think that it flipped, for example, at the time of the Great Flood, and which we talked about previously. And so it's not the direction of the pole that's so important for these calculations. It's the total energy of the magnetic field. But be that as it may, the point here, as with the point of the spinning plate, which kind of started our conversation, is that things are slowing down because of entropy, and we know that. Now, here's another interesting question, an interesting point. Now, when God created the heavens and the earth, he created them, and on the last day of creation, which was day six, he said everything was perfect. His final creation was the pinnacle of his creation was man, And after he creates man, he then says that everything is perfect or it's very good. And so at that time, there was no entropy. Think about that. I mean, at that time, things weren't degrading. The universe wasn't degrading. But we know from other scriptures, for example, because of sin, sin introduced a degrading universe. It says the creation groans, you know, because of the sin of man, basically, and awaits for being renewed, if you will, when Jesus basically returns. So that means then the reason, if you look at it from a spiritual point of view, which I like to, you know, kind of look at.
Well, spiritual and physical meld into one at some point, and that this is a great indicator that that is so. That sin, yeah, is not just a matter of doing bad things, that it's degraded the entire creation, and as days go by, we're getting less and less perfect, farther and farther away from the ideal.
Right, and farther away from God. And so, therefore, God had to hold the universe in place, and as, if you will, you know, forgive the metaphor, but his hands are being withdrawn from a corrupt earth, a corrupt man, the universe is slowly decaying, and you know, basically, as Peter, you know, describes, at some point it'll be burnt up, because God says enough is enough, and that's going to be the end, be the end of it. So the decay that we see wasn't always there, you know, from the very beginning, as God's original intent was to have fellowship with man for eternity here on a physical earth. And the only way that that could have possibly happened is if the earth was perfect and did not decay and man did not decay.
Well, the beauty in this is that with all the number of planets and stars and galaxies and the billions of units in the cosmos now, all degrading in such a way that the thing holds together, bespeaks an incredible design and purpose. I mean, nothing in this surprised God. Yeah,
exactly. And nothing, I mean, he designed it that way from the very beginning, knowing that man, of course, would sin, and that he would have to, God the Father would have to send his own son to bring man back into right relationship with him.
And as John implies, the solution existed from the very beginning as well, not just the problem. We're talking with Dr. Don Clark, member of the board of Creation Moments. Their website, creationmoments.com, you'll find lots of scientific information there that supplements, explains, buttresses the biblical story of creation. And I recommend it to you, creationmoments.com. And Don, we can go a lot further into this because this is pretty complex stuff. But
I was kind of hoping to find out when the plate was going to fall.
What do you got planned for Thursday?
Yeah. Oh, when the plate.
I was gonna say. I'll be gone Friday. I'm just wondering if we should even bother saying have a good weekend.
Well.
I think we have a couple of more weeks yet.
Okay.
Don, appreciate your expertise, and it was interesting. We learned something today. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Okay.
Okay. Very good. See you, folks.
See you, Don.